We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
History in 5 songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Well, welcome back once again. This is History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good folks at Pantheon Podcast. We are pleased, as always, to be part of this vast and always expanding Pantheon Podcast Network. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, and over 40 other podcast platforms. All right, so this is episode 219. I'm calling this Hair Metal Fails by 70s Bands. 218 was Hair Metal Wins by 70s Bands. And I might have one more in this series that could lead to be the most interesting one, I think, out of all of these. But the three together make a good trilogy of how these 70s bands fared in terms of navigating the waters of the big hair metal thing that happened from basically 1983 to 1982, let's say, with the Nexus being the Sunset Strip there in West Hollywood. I think it's West Hollywood, right? Anyways, Hollywood. Fond memories of making that trip down there, going to the private box with Brian Slagle and seeing a Kings game. We saw an Anaheim Ducks game as well. We went to Disneyland, right? Good friend of mine, Bob Nalbandian, sadly no longer with us, took me on a little tour of the Sunset Strip. It was very cool. Got to hang out with him. And yes, so that's kind of where it all happened, but it certainly didn't happen for these bands. So this is your Hair Metal Fails by 70s Bands. Let's take a listen to our first selection and we shall discuss. This is Triumph with Hooked on You.
You turn on your love light. You burn me, but it's so right. 'Cause I'm hooked on you. Hooked on it. The fire that's burning in your eyes. Hooked on it. I just can't disguise how I feel. What can I do?
All right, so the theme here is going to be these Canadian bands. Triumph is a really, really woeful example of a band that might have been able to navigate the hair metal waters, but just basically failed at it. This is off of The Sport of Kings. On September 11th, 1986, this came out, so right in the punted thick of the hair metal situation. This one I find kind of interesting. It's sung by both Gil and Rick, so this band, it's a trio, of course, and they had two singers in the band. But, you know, perhaps they didn't have the look. They were starting to fight a lot by this stage. You know, Mike Levine with the big handlebar mustache. I mean, they didn't really jump into the clothes so much. But, you know, the fact of the matter is Triumph kind of pioneered this whole thing in a certain respect. So they could have, should have been able to do this. They were great businessmen. They got big producers for these albums. You know, Allied Forces in 81 went platinum. I'm amazed that Just a Game is gold in the States. That blows my mind from two records back. But yeah, Progressions of Power didn't certify. And it's probably my favorite, that or Allied Forces. But Allied Forces, platinum, Never Surrender in 1982 went gold. Thunder 7 in 84 even went gold in the States. So they had a great sort of foundation to be able to get into this situation. So they had a gold album in hair metal's first big year, basically, 1984, produced by Eddie Kramer. Then this Sport of Kings came out in 86. It did not certify. It was produced by Mike Clink, Guns N' Roses, right? And then they had Surveillance in 1987, and it didn't certify, and it was self-produced. These last two were recorded at Metalworks, you know, Gilmour's big studio. But, you know, the fact of the matter is the songwriting was atrocious. They seemed to not really have any clue about having a vision or a direction. I don't know if there was really very much, you know, creative acumen in this band ever. You know, it's funny. Working on that Triumph doc, you know, I ended up transcribing hours and hours of reviews for the Triumph doc at Banger. And the funny thing is it just hit me like a lightning bolt at one point. All this talk this band did about themselves, they never once talked about songwriting. So they had nothing to say lyrically, that they just allowed horrible productions to happen, awful keyboard sounds, awful drum sounds. These later records, you know, no one's really a fan of them. It's almost like their fit, their place in time. Obviously the US Festival is the pinnacle of their career, but it's almost like their place in time was to be a fairly heavy band in the late 70s or the early 80s. Go back to my, you know, Did Canada Invent Hair Metal episode. I really like that episode. But Triumph is kind of in there setting the groundwork for this thing, but they just didn't transition over. In terms of these Canadian bands, again, you've got Kim Mitchell going on as a solo career. You know, I don't think that was really ever going to fit. It's the namesake of this guy who, you know, he's kind of like a tall, lanky guy. He's balding a little. He's quirky. He's a great songwriter. Pie Dubois is one of my favorite lyricists of all time. He's writing the lyrics. You know, and he has quite a great run in Canada, but it just didn't translate to the States. I don't think he was ever going to be a hair metal guy. He's too smart for that, too great a guitarist. The lyrics were too good. So that wasn't really going to carry over, despite having Peter Fredette as the second singer, who's amazing. But yeah, they kind of had their place. You know, people have said about Kim, this pulling out of the tour when they were on tour with Rush and breaking up Max Webster might have cursed him forever in terms of being able to navigate the business waters in the States. So I don't know if there's much to be said for that. But yeah, Kim Mitchell's another one that didn't carry over. Another one just like Triumph that didn't carry over, identical really, is April Wine for these Canadian bands. Nature of the Beast, 1981, goes platinum. Power Play, 1982, doesn't certify. Animal Grace in 84, doesn't certify. Walking Through Fire in 85, doesn't certify. Then there's nothing until Frigate in 1993. Walking Through Fire is considered almost like a posthumous album where the band was breaking up or almost broken up where it got made and released. But again, just like Triumph, they just allowed every bad production thing to be done to them. They didn't have any vision. They didn't seem to really like decide that they wanted to be in this hair metal thing. So they're still making songs that now sound dated. They sound 4 to 5 years old sort of thing. They sound more like 1981, 1980 music. You know, I often say Sammy Hagar's an interesting case of this heartland rock sort of thing. Your Night Ranger, your Lover Boy, that whole early 80s situation, it's almost like April Wine and Triumph never got out of being that sort of situation. And it, you know, these later records expose that perhaps the songwriting wasn't there. Perhaps they just weren't that good. Triumph definitely. Those later Triumph albums are some of the most atrocious albums you'll ever hear. Just pandering, just trying in a really stumbly way to fit into the hair metal thing, and it's just like a big no. I want to mention one other one. It's not a 70s band per se, but I think it's an interesting case. And it's not even particularly a fail. It's actually they do kind of okay. Lover Boy 1980 album, the self-titled, goes double platinum. Get Lucky, 1981, goes 4 times platinum in the States. So this, again, paints and points to that situation of these Canadian bands in the early 80s, laying the groundwork for the whole hair metal thing. Keep It Up in 83, goes double platinum. Loving Every Minute of It, 85, double platinum. So they are, you know, now in the punted thick of the hair metal thing and doing quite well. Wild Side goes gold. And then it's kind of a fail because they stop there. I mean, even with a gold record, you would think, okay, you know, you got to get one more out of these guys. So that's your Canadian band situation. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
All right, back again here. Episode 219, Hair Metal Fails by 70s Bands. Let's take a listen to our second selection and we shall discuss. This is Saxon with We Came Here to Rock. We never said we were perfect. We lay on the line. They can stick their fences still. Where the sun don't shine. We came here to rock. 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 All right, they just squeeze in here because their first album is May 1979, Saxon Saxon. This album here, you've got the likes of Battle Cry on here, Waiting for the Night, You Ain't No Angel, and the infamous Party Till You Puke. So Saxon, really, really bad situation here again. Power and the Glory is an amazing album, an absolute complete masterpiece. 1983, so it's the tail end of the new wave of British heavy metal, decisively a new wave of British heavy metal album produced by Jeff Glicksman. Incredible record. But they start trying to navigate the hair metal waters and start trying to like build on these inroads that they got with Power and the Glory in the States with Crusader 1984, produced by Kevin Beamish. The wheels are kind of falling off here. They've got the novelty covers going. The production's not great, very cavernous, kind of missing the guitars. They followed up with Innocence is No Excuse 1985, produced by Simon Hanhart, with the infamous front cover of the girl biting the apple, and it's all kind of fakey looking. Rock the Nations 1986, produced by Gary Lyons, famous party boy producer. And then Destiny 1988, produced by Stefan Gallus. You know, this was painful. My Saxon book, Denim and Leather, is still completely available. I've got them at martinpopoff.com. You can get them from Weimar in the UK. But it was painful writing these chapters on these later albums. Well, not later albums. They have like a dozen, 20 albums after this kind of thing. They made a lot of music and they really kind of reformed themselves. Really starting quite more or less right away. Like they've... The rest of the catalog is quite interesting and quite good. They looked terrible. The clothing choices were awful. You know, bandanas and things around their head and stuff like that. Just really, you know, Biff in his kind of white suits kind of thing. They didn't get the look right at all. And granted, they were kind of an older band. Even in 79, they'd been going for a few years. And so maybe it's not so surprising that they didn't do so great. But they could have done better. There seemed to be, you know, a little bit of momentum, like I say. They might have navigated the waters more like a traditional heavy metal band trying to stick with traditional heavy metal and plowing through that whole thing. So that might have worked. But just bouncing around to all these producers, trying these you know, flagrant hair metal ploys, absolutely not looking the part, you know, looking like a bunch of 70s guys trying to tart themselves up. It did not look good, and it did not sound good. You got Elton John playing piano on one song later on, I believe. Just really sort of novelty things and just atrocious lyrics, just trying to be hair metal with these hair metal lyrics. And the theme here a little bit, these new wave of British heavy metal bands, granted, I mean, they aren't 70s bands, but this whole thing didn't work. Tigers of Pantank fell flat on their face. Savage followed up a magnificent album with kind of a hair metal-y thing. You've got your Chrome Molly and your Baby Tuck Who. you know, you've got the likes of these later bands not really even doing all that great either. You know, as much as they tried to push Thunder all over Kerrang all the time, they did not break through in the States. You had London Choir Boys who had a little bit of success. Little Angels, you know, early on you had Wrathchild. So yeah, none of this UK stuff really broke through. There's just the one major anomaly in Def Leppard, I guess, is the big deal. So all right, let's move on. Let's listen to our third selection here. Take a listen, Your Eye Heap with Rich Kid. She don't know. All right, so here you go. Your Eye Heap from Raging Silence, 1989. So this is produced by Richard Dodd. This is the first one with Bernie Shaw. Obviously, Your Eye Heap would very quickly, not very quickly, it would take a little while, basically up to, I guess, starting with Sea of Light. But starting at that point, Your Eye Heap just becomes an amazing, amazing band again. Probably one of the best examples, most inspiring examples of a band making amazing music, lots of records, just rehabilitating themselves. Basically, Your Eye Heap in the 2000s is a close second to Your Eye Heap in the early 70s in terms of quality of what they're doing. But so the situation with them, they get some momentum going with, granted, trying to be a little more commercial and a little bit of a hair metal direction with the Bombadog, March 1982, produced by Ashley Howe. They follow up that with the very creditable, I really like it, Head First, May 1983, Ashley Howe producing again. The wheels start falling off a little bit because it's got kind of a clattery production. Equator, 1985, Tony Platt. Now, the important thing is this is the Peter Golby trilogy. So he's the lead singer of the band and he's gone after this. But I think they do a pretty good job of bringing Your Eye Heap, obviously an ancient band at this point. They're not going to look the part. You know, granted, we don't really expect them to do well, but they come into it and they do a kind of a good job of a synthesis of, you know, not really much early Your Eye Heap in here. So not really any of like the late 70s sound or the early 70s sound, but more like a commercial British sound mixed with that commercial heartland rock nascent birth of hair metal sound from about 1980 to 1983, along with traditional heavy metal. So they bring into these records and bring forward the idea of an identity that bends a little but doesn't break, sort of thing. I think Raging Silence is much crappier, though. This is May 1989, so there is a four-year gap in here as well. And this does have a lot of flagrant hair metal ploys, as you can tell on this song. It really sounds like a hair metal band. They're totally trying to be that way. And then they followed up with Different World in 1991. I took these out here. What's what do we got here? So so on Raging Silence, we've got the Blood Red Roses was a pretty big song, but you got Lifeline, Voice on My TV, Cry Freedom, Bad Bad Man, More Fool You, When the War is Over, Rough Justice, Hold Your Head Up, right? The cover of the Origin song. So that's a novelty hair metal ploy as well. And then they even redo Look at Yourself on it. So you can tell they're clamoring for a direction. And I look at the clothes and the shot on the back, and they really are trying to do the hair metal thing. There's a lot of fringe and fills, and you can tell a costume guy got to them, but they've got these slightly fancy jackets and stuff. Bernie Shaw's looking pretty laid back there, looking pretty young in his ripped jeans. Different World has the likes of Blood on Stone, Which Way the Wind Blow, Which Way Will the Wind Blow, All God's Children, All for Well. They're not terribly hair metal sounding titles, and they both have pretty crappy album covers. All right, so let's move on to our next selection here. Take a listen to this, Bluish Occult with Shadow Warrior.
Hey!
Okay, so Blue Oyster Cult is another, fail that feels a little bit like the Uriah Heep situation, I suppose. They get a lot of momentum going with just being a big band throughout most of the late 70s. Fire of Unknown Origin is well received. It's only certified as gold right now, but that album certainly, if someone went back, like Steve Shank, if you're listening, go back and go get these guys some more certifications based on streaming numbers, because I think you can. So that happens. They lose Albert, so they lose a key songwriter. They put out a double live album. They put out Revolution by Night, produced by Bruce Fairburn, and here you get them trying to squeeze into the nascent hair metal sound. You've got kind of a really Simmons electronic drums sound going on the drum situation here, which is kind of distracting. But when you get up to this album that I played Shadow Warrior off of, this is Club Ninja, December 10th, 1985. It's a very overworked album produced by Sandy Pearlman, but you would never know it. There's nothing 70s about it. It's just a lot of hair metal tropes thrown into the production. Very soupy, sloggy drums. The songs are just not very, very good or up-tempo. As you can hear with the Shadow Warrior thing, they're trying a few more Imaginos type things. By the way, I really got to get that second Imaginos book done. It's one of my priorities for the next couple of weeks. It is awesome so far. It's even better than Flaming Telepaths, which is one of my favorite things I've ever done. But I've only got 25 pictures done, and I want to get 14 more at least to match what I did in the old one. The word count is more. It's going to be really, really cool. But it does also have things like Dancing in the Ruins, Make Rock Not War, and Beat 'Em Up. So it's got these kind of attempts at a sort of hair metal thing. But basically what happens is it comes across as dated hair metal, guys that can't do hair metal, guys that seem to be trying to be commercial and then falling flat on their face. It worked much better with Revolution by Night when they tried to just stick in their lane and be this old sounding band. I've often said of Club Ninja, by the way, the new Blue Oyster Cult book just out is the panel book, and there were some great things said about the comparison between these two albums. It's called Dominance and Submission, the Blue Oyster Cult canon. You can get that at martinpopoff.com. The one thing I remember that these guys talked about, and we kind of came to this idea together, is that this album could even come out before Revolution by Night, and it wouldn't have sounded any more out of date or in date. It sounds like a 1982 album, even though it's 85, and Revolution by Night sounds like an 83 album. The band sort of falls apart a bit. They get smaller and smaller. They're playing clubs. They do the Imaginos album, which is more like a sitting out the hair metal thing. They're really like not even trying anymore. It's like they took their one shot at it, and it was a bomb, commercial and critically, and then they do this album, and then they're gone for a long, long time. So that's definitely a hair metal fail. I want to mention one other band that I think is kind of analogous to this because he grew up in the same, the same world as Blue Oyster Cult, is Ted Nugent. This is also a 70s band. What did I call this again? Episode 219, Hair Metal Fails by 70s Band. So Ted Nugent's situation is he makes an atrocious album called Nugent in 1982. Bad, bad situation. Not really much of a band, just one of his worst. It's kind of like Signals, the start of this fallow period, where before, he had some good stuff in there. I'm still a champion of Scream Dream and State of Shock. A lot of people aren't. Penetrator comes out in 1984. Brian Howe is singing this, and it's a really decent hair metal album. It's a little bit dated for 1984. It's maybe like 1983, early 83, mid 83 sort of sound. It's very sort of clattery and high production, a little bit like Equator. But Brian Howe is a great singer. He goes on to be in Bad Company, and I think they do a pretty good job. Little Miss Dangerous comes out in 1986. Dave Amato is singing, and again, it's a pretty decent album. It gets a little bit of notoriety with the Ted Nugent sung title track, gets on radio a little bit. So he's kind of doing an okay job at this point, but alas, it is a fail because both of them fail commercially. And then they follow up with If You Can't Lick 'Em, Lick 'Em. 1988, Ted sings this basically. Tom Werman produces, but you'd never know it. It doesn't sound like a Tom Werman production. And it fails again. This one fails even more, critically speaking, I would say. And it fails, you know, equally badly on a commercial level. So, you know, Ted is a fail in this. The band is changing all the time. There's no chemistry. There's no real band. There's no Derek St. Holmes. But I think both of those albums, Penetrator and Little Miss Dangerous, deserve a little bit of a look in. All right, let's move on to our fifth selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Molly Hatchet with Stone in Your Heart. Okay, Molly Hatchet. So the theme here is the Southern rock bands, Molly Hatchet being the most flagrant of these. This is from The Deed Is Done, November 1984. Song Doctor songs all over the place. All the Southern rockisms of this band are gone. They're replaced by braying keyboards and maudlin, you know, truck stop Walmart metal, you know, sort of melodies that that these, you know, these bands, these labels, these producers tried to say, we'll give you a little bit of this. You can maybe have new country chord changes, and we'll see if that works. And then we'll stick some terrible keys over top of it, and we'll bring in some guys to write songs, because you certainly can't write songs for the 80s sort of thing, right? So Molly Hatchet starts out, the 1978 debut goes platinum, Flirting with Disaster, 79, double platinum. Beating the Odds, platinum. So they're doing great, right? Take No Prisoners, 1981, does not certify. No Guts, No Glory, 1983, does not certify. This album, The Deed Is Done, 84, does not certify. Lightning Strikes, 1989, doesn't certify. This album, The Deed Is Done, they all got those perfectly cool Molly Hatchet album covers. It's got a big warrior on it, blood on the axe. We got Straight Shooter, Backstabber, Satisfied Man, Good Smoke and Whiskey, She Does, I Ain't Got You, Heartbreak Radio, Stone in Your Heart, Man on the Run, Song for the Children. What do we got here? Take No Prisoners, 1981. These are all signed by Dave Lubeck back in 2006 down by the Opera House here in Toronto. It was great meeting him. Sadly, no longer with us. Big weight problem with him. You figured his days were sort of numbered. But 1981... I won't even read these song titles, because 1981 is not the period we're talking about, is it? No Guts, No Glory, 83. So this is the start of the hair metal thing. They're still looking totally Southern rock on the back cover. They're literally dressed as cowboys, shooting guns and stuff. Follow the Peacemakers, Under the Gun, On the Prowl, Both Sides, Ain't Even Close, What's It Gonna Take, What Does It Matter? So on this one, there's actually a photograph of the guys. Yeah, they're dressed all Wild West on the front, you know, going out for a big duel sort of thing. That's probably the worst one, the most ridiculed of the Southern rock band situations. But let's not forget, there's also Blackfoot Scioggia, which, Blackfoot Scioggia, 1983. So they're trying a hair metal thing, but I think they do a really good job of it. Again, it's a little bit like your I-Heap, Abominog. There's the Ken Hensley, connection as well. But to me, I think this is a good combination of sort of Southern rock and some of those good roots rock melodies, but really tight, tough production. The keyboards are done right. They're not flagrant. Nothing's maudlin about it. It really does sound like a really decent attempt and something they could have carried forward, but they didn't. Vertical Smiles in 1984 is terrible. Rick Medlock and Blackfoot in 87 is terrible. Medicine Man, 90, not even really a Blackfoot. I mean, neither is Rick Medlock and Blackfoot. So they basically crash in flames very fast. Unfortunately, I wish people would have accepted Scioggia. I thought it was a pretty cool album. Lynyrd Skynyrd does nothing at all in the 80s. Obviously, they're dealing with a tragedy, but really, they sit out the entire 80s with this thing. But in their place, you've got Rossington Collins Band, with Return to the Scene of the Crime in 86, Love Your Man in 88. I thought those were pretty decent albums, and they tried to do the hair metal thing. They did it not terribly, I suppose. I well, I don't know. Maybe they're not so great. But you know, the early Rossington Callings Bands album, I think are really good. You know, those, the Alan Collins. What else do we got here? The Danny Joe Brown. There's a whole bunch of these side records in Southern Rock. Remember, I got that book Southern Rock Review, right? There's these side records that people don't talk about a lot that are some of the best Southern Rock records of all time. 38 Special. Another case of this whole thing. Basically every one of these Southern Rock bands, you know, ZZ Top's a funny one. That's a whole different situation. But these Southern Rock bands, anyways, just did not navigate this. The industry, you know, whether they were conspiring against them, whether these bands were not moving to LA, which is the case too, the whole Southern Rock vibe and ethos was like oil and water with the whole hair metal thing. It just did not go together. Like the English bands, they actually didn't look the part either. They're all, you know, packing on a few pounds at this point too. They like their long hair and they like their mustaches and stuff. 38 Special, Wild-Eyed Southern Boys, 1981. Their fourth goes platinum. 1982's Special Forces goes platinum. Tour de Force, 83, platinum. What a run. But again, they are in there doing kind of the Siogo thing. They're in there doing the really good combination of slightly getting into the 80s, but keeping some of their sound and staying traditional in other ways. So there's not a bunch of hair metal tropes at this place because we're still pre-hair metal, but they're doing a really good job of being this commercial radio, kind of hard rock and Southern, a heartland rock sort of band. Strength in Numbers, 86 goes gold, so they're having a bit of a drop. Rock and Roll Strategy in 1988 does not certify. Born Against Steel 1991 does not certify either. And yeah, you're getting into the album covers looking, you know, the black and white and the really kind of trying to look classy thing that goes on, right? So yeah, there you go. That's your Southern Rock theme in these fails as well. They're basically all fails. Other honorable mentions I wanted to say, UFO, Misdemeanor, 85, Ain't Misbehaving EP of six new songs, 88, High Stakes and Dangerous Men, 92. This is, you know, the infamous Atomic Tommy M era, Misdemeanor and Ain't Misbehaving. It still blows my mind that Paul Gray, who is an absolute legend, I love the guy, he's in the Damned, he's a big part of the Damned, he was on those things. So that's terrible for him. Not a good part of his resume. But yeah, UFO did not navigate these waters well, and they really kind of could have, should have. They just had, they were a band that kind of set up all this as well. They had such a great resume of these hard rocking, you know, interesting songs with a Springsteen vibe and keyboards and all that stuff. A lot of melodies, very mainstreamy, but they could not do it in the 80s. Cheap Trick's a funny one. You know, you might call it a success because, well, Standing on the Edge does not certify 85. Doctor does not certify 86. Lap of Luxury in 88 goes platinum. But those guys don't even like that album. It's all song doctory and crappy. Busted, same sort of record. We did a Contrarians episode calling it the worst Cheap Trick album in 1990, does not certify. So I would call Cheap Trick a fail, all told, even though they pooped out a platinum album during that time, but it is a horrible album. And really, there's not much to get super excited about there. Crocus is another one. You know, good foundation with Headhunter. The Blitz, Bruce Fairburn produced, goes gold, but they're getting a little hair metal-y there, or pretty hair metal-y. Change of Address, produced by Tom Werman, 1986, does not certify. Heart Attack, they get rid of the logo, 1988, self-produced, it does not certify. So they unwisely go into a hair metal direction, and again, I think the lesson here is maybe if some of these bands would have stuck to their, you know, just leaned it a little bit left, back to their traditional metal roots and keep going and add a little bit of hair metal, but not a lot of hair metal, some of these bands might have persevered, kind of like an Aussie situation where you bent but you did not break sort of thing. So there you go. If you like this episode and want to support future episodes, go to ko-fi.com/MartinPopoff. Hit that red support button. Buy me a coffee or a pint. This week, I would like to thank Andy at Black Sugar Transmission, who just did an amazing job. He's going to be in one of my panel books coming up again. Man, it's great talking to him. Lee Clifford, David Fisher, very generous. Take a break, bud. Very cool. Lee Fordham, Jamie Laszlo, John Lilly, Monty Olson, Agustin Garcia de Pretty, Steve Polari, and William Walker. Keep those ideas coming, William. We'll get back to some of them again, but I appreciate your enthusiasm and also very generous. Thank you again. For all the books, you can go to martinpopoff.com. Some exciting ones coming down the pipes. Although, why do I keep saying this stuff? Because these episodes are not particularly time sensitive. They just last forever, right? But anyways, the Who book is coming. The Kiss book is coming. The Bluish Cult book is out now and it's selling really well. And that's a panel book. Man, if you want to learn everything you want to know about Bluish Cult beyond what I've ever told you in Bluish Cult books, hearing other opinions, and great concepts and great theories. Yeah, that's Dominance and Submission. The Bluish Cult canon, Martin Popoff.com. Your homework for today, you know what? Go listen to What Could Have, Should Have. There are some great songs on Blackfoot Siogo. Go play that Blackfoot album.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at the RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at RNR Archaeology.